This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. We are on location in Kentucky with George Ella Lyon and her new book. So let's hear a poem.
This is the opening poem, Little Girl Who Knows Too Much. Who in the third grade is savvy and wary, whose face is her grown-up face, who would welcome dullness but can't afford it, whose innocence has been slammed into insolence. What happens at her house? Does she have a house? Does she have a father, a brother, a mother's lover who has forced on her this face? She's in the front row. I can't help but look at her. Even her clothes are uneasy. She questions my spiel about writing as a way to connect with your inside self. Your story. And where would that get me, old woman? She seems to say, I've still got to do a lot of time as a child. I've got to try to save my outside self, as you so stupidly call it. Go home till you have something to say that helps.
That is the voice of George Ella Lyon from her new book. And she teaches us that nothing works but the truth in poetry. Georgiella, what's the title of this book and how do you describe the contents?
It's Back to the Light, published by University Press of Kentucky in 2021. It really is a reckoning with some of my early experience and trying to give this child something that helps by looking at what helped me along the way. And the book is in memory of Phyllis Janess, who was my singing teacher. And she said, sing with the voice you have, not the voice you want.
That is wonderful, Georgiella. That is wonderful. Sing with the voice you have. And you really have been singing your voice. Why is it that nothing works but the truth in poetry?
Because you can't hide and speak truth at the same time. I think it's Adrienne Rich who said that the subconscious wants truth. If you're not going to be true, it's not going to speak to you.
So, and how long did it take you to know that as a writer?
Oh, it's an ongoing lesson, isn't it? There's things I'm still trying to find a way to speak about, and that's the work.
That is the work. Georgiella, you have contributed so much to the world that I hope we can touch on some of it in this short time. But in the meantime, read us two together so we really know Georgiella Lyon.
All right. The title is a quotation from David Rubenstein. One way to look at your life is to ask, what have I done with my breath? I held it. It went bad. I had it knocked out of me. I went in search of it, under my shoulders, above my belly, behind my heart. It was wary and held itself against me. I made promise. I'll welcome the swell of the belly. I'll praise you with open ribs. The breath sighed. I'll shout, I whispered. I'll ride your wave with a song. Go look in your story, breath said. That's where you left me.
What a poem. Let's hear another.
Out with it. I'm telling you his name was fear, guilt, shame. I'm telling you his name. I'm saying what he did when I was just a kid. I'm saying what he did. He took me in his room, maple bunk bed tomb. He took me in his room. He was 12 and I was 5. I left my body to survive. He was 12. He was 12. I was 5. I told my mama and I cried. She turned stony, said I lied. I told my mama. But she said, I lied. I was 5 and she was grown, so I made her truth my own. I was 5 and made her truth my own. They were bigger than me, but I've labored to be free. Nothing's bigger, bigger than free. So I'm telling you his name was fear, guilt, shame. He was 12 and I was 5, and my mama said I lied. But they are gone. I am grown. And now my truth is my own.
Georgiella, your truth is our truth. And the body does not lie, because when we hear you, we hear everything we ever wanted to hide. Adrienne Rich said, everything that's buried is not dead. So your mission in life is to excavate the truth and to make push the envelope so that we all can speak. But in addition to just being open and vulnerable, it takes craft, doesn't it? Was that a Sestina?
No, it's not a fixed form. It just evolved a little bit with the repetition of lines, a little bit like a blues, you know.
That's what I got. Those refrains. Right. Were you influenced by the blues when you wrote that?
I wasn't thinking about that, but I'm very saturated with music. So my husband is a musician, and I often incorporate singing into my readings because I write poems. I mean, I write songs too. So, and when I'm in school with kids, I get them to sing with me. So,
Georgiella, you have found your voice in every language. But I want to talk about craft, because that is what floats your boat. I mean, we had the repetition, we had the rhyming, we had the interior rhythm and the lyricism, which kept us moving with you. It wasn't like a staccato report. So how, when you teach, how do you tell people that we must build an armature for the truth?
One thing I always say, because I do this, is read everything out loud, because your ear will tell you when the language goes flat. It will tell you when you're not telling the truth, because your voice changes. You may not realize it, but it does. I also urge them to read a lot and to try out different forms, because you may not write a villanelle that you want now, but if you have that form in your repertoire, when something comes for which that is the right container, you'll have it.
But more than anything, you've been a teacher, you're an award-winning poet, and more than anything, you are the arrow in the heart of poetry. So please read us two more. From, and tell us the book title again. It's from the University of Kentucky Press.
Back to the Light.
Georgiella Lyon.
This is called A Writer, because writing is certainly one of the things that has saved me, and working with other writers, and of course, as a reader, poetry has saved me. Writer, the page is not your limit. This book, this room, they are not your margins. You can write on a street, a state, a continent. You who wove your words out of meadow grasses and hawk feathers, write on the river, write on the sky, write in between November sycamore branches, on the line of a prairie horizon. Write back to history. Answer every note you ever received, including those from birds. Ask your dreams questions. Ask your body for secrets. What words lodge at the base of your spine or under the heft of your breast? Each stroke of your heart sends rich red ink on its errands, picking up food and air, brightening speech. Think. You are never inkless, always in the flow. You have only to pick up a pen, small wand that taps your great tree of life. This is the season. You are what you are.
George Ella Lyon, did you have that bird come in on cue?
It's my bird clock. I couldn't believe it did that.
Pretty clever, I think. Well, I want everyone to know that you were formerly the Poet Laureate of Kentucky, 2015 to 2016. And you have won many awards, have written 50 books for children and adults. And some of them are award-winning books. I will read the titles: Voices of Justice, Many Storied House, She Let Herself Go, Voices from the March on Washington, and that won the Sibbles Award. Catawba, and that won the Appalachian Writers Association Book of the Year. Then you were featured on PBS. Talk about how that happened. Your poem, Where I'm From, was a national feature, and then many people used that as an exemplar poem to teach. How did all that come about?
It was a miracle. Really, the poem itself came about from a poem by a friend of mine, and her poem came about from something somebody said. So it was a pass it on phenomenon from the beginning. Then I used it with teachers in workshops, and then they took it, and now it's gone around the world. It's just astounding what's happened with that poem. And I just got to be the what person who it came through, you know. But the United States of Poetry, the PBS series you mentioned, came, they did two poets in Kentucky, and they came to me partly because though they were in New York City, one of them had a family connection to Harlan, which is the little coal town I'm from. And so he was interested in somebody, you know, from that part of the state. So I sent several poems, and that was the one they wanted. And so that was another way that the poem got out into the world.
How did the teachers use that poem?
It's a list poem, you know, I am from, or I am not from, or
do you think you invented that list? Because that's being used universally. In fact, I use that for my workshop for children, young people to introduce themselves. Did you then create that?
Well, not completely, because my friend Joe Carson's poem is spoken by someone who doesn't live where she's from, but she loves it. So she says, I'm from people who don't have roots like trees. I'm from the bed I get up from every morning. So she uses that, but it's just a small part of Joe's poem. And then I took it, because I am from people who have roots like trees, I took it and went with it that way. But so my whole poem's like that. It was a segment in her poem, and it was a segment in what this person said, whoever it was. Because Joe's book, Stories I Ain't Told Nobody Yet, are all based on things she heard people say. So they come right out of what Wallace Stevens called the bread of faithful speech, and into a poem. And then it went on. I think, you know, it's about the power of place, in identity. It's about the power of poetry, about the longing for a voice, and teachers who, I mean, that's what's, and of course the internet, when the internet hit, you know, it just kept going. But
well, George Ella, I want to talk about your world and your location, but first we want two more poems from you, because when you speak, we do not forget.
You were talking about finding the voice of the poem, telling the truth. And I first tried to write about this experience as if it were funny, because I had told it as funny all the years since it happened. It happened in 1981. And only recently did I realize what it was about, and that it was not funny at all. And so that's a journey to the truth of an experience. Why I Fell at the Folger Shakespeare Library. For decades, I've told the story how, impressed with myself, I bought foolish shoes for a big reading in D.C., how I tossed aside my rule, never wear shoes you can't run in. Beige leather and suede, lightly heeled pumps. I've said that's why I fell on the intricate parquet stage, freeing poems to fly and requiring me on hands and knees to grope for salvation, her words, the bowl, stripped, before standing to make my way to the podium. I've laughed at my first line, at least that's over, and mocked my distress as I peered into dark and saw my parents had come. 9 hours they'd driven from Kentucky, only to witness the sprawl of an awkward daughter's pride. Then, at the reception, a family friend from my hometown came from behind, turned me, and kissed me on the cheek. "I'm living in Fairfax now," he said. "Sorry I was late and stumbled in." "You stumbled," I said, choking on Pinot Noir. My mother gave him a hug. I told the story, my downfall, my vanity, those shoes. The century would be gone before my mind knew what this neighbor had begun when he was 12 and I was 5. How his hand over my mouth, he'd forced me down. How he'd split my life. "Nobody will believe you," he said, and he was right. Who was I kidding, disguised as a poet, claiming I had a voice? Just his approach, homing in on the Folger, would fling me to the floor, tear words from my hands, have me groveling right where he'd left me.
If that it does not win every award in the book, then I'm giving it up. His assault, once when you were most vulnerable, twice when you were most vulnerable, but yet you had the wherewithal to make that a flag of poetry. George Ella, I am proud of your work. I want to talk about your world. Do you say Appalachia or Appalachia?
Appalachia.
Well, is there a literature of Appalachia?
There is a huge literature of Appalachia, and there's a huge community of Appalachian writers and teachers. And it's very supportive, very interconnected. And it's been a huge part of my growing up as a writer, being in that circle, you know, in that circle and learning both as a writer and a teacher, and learning that I can speak from where I'm from.
Well, what are the geographic ideas of what Appalachia is?
Well, there's Southern Appalachia, which is Georgia, North Georgia, East Tennessee, Eastern North Carolina, Eastern Kentucky, West Virginia. But it goes on up, you know, to the on up to Maine, and even some go into Western New York.
We could call it the United States.
There's a big backbone. And of course, the cultures are different along that way. And the summer industrial, I mean, I was from this little town of Harlem, but it was a coal mining town. So the industry of coal mining and timbering, owned, of course, by absentee corporations. We had the corporation thing long before corporations were owning the rest of us. But, you know, and we had environmental degradation long before it was seen as a worldwide problem.
That's right. It began there.
Yes.
But your work comes from the soil. It comes from the rich pain of the soil of your people. And you are a spokesperson for your people. So when you tell a tiny anecdote, it really is about more than that anecdote. Can you describe what philosophical radiation comes from telling a tiny story?
Well, you know, stories are where we come from. And our hope of heaven aside, stories are where we're going. So when you share a story, you're sharing something so precious, and that is just a glimpse into a much greater understanding. So, and sometimes it's just a phrase. I mean, a student will say a phrase, and I know there's an enormous story behind that. And the same with their Where I'm From poems. There'll be a line, you know, there's a story embedded in there, and another poem or a short story or an essay, or so pointing out to them the richness in the possibilities of their own work, the stories that they carry, because we all carry multitudes, almost an infinity of stories. In my book, Many Storied House, it's all poems in the house where I grew up, and it's spatial. You go in and you have to go in the living room, and in the living room, all the poems that happen in there are in there.
That is a wonderful construct. That is a wonderful construct. And how many rooms do you go in?
I go through the whole house, and then I go out in the yard, but I can't go beyond that. That was my structure. You know, I couldn't go to my grandparents' house, or I couldn't, you know, it all had to be right there. My grandfather built the house for my parents. So we were the only people who had lived it. It was our house from the get-go. And I did this, I made up this exercise based on a lot of other people's exercises called Mapping Your Memory House. And then I did so many poems as I was using that exercise. I always write when I give people an exercise. Because, you know, you need all your writing time you can get.
You can't waste a minute.
You can't. So I realized, this could be a whole book. I mean, I know there's a poem in the junk drawer. You know, there's a poem everywhere. If you're in that... when you're in that zone, in that openness.
Feel that you have depended and drawn on a huge spirit, that you've been gifted with a huge spirit, so that there is like George Ella Lyon, and then there's another beautiful George Ella Lyon, and then there's another layer of you? Do you think you have just abundance of spirit?
I think there's a larger self that we can sometimes be in. Mm-hmm. And when we're there, there's something transcendent there. But it's not just us, it's the spirit, as you say. And there we can't stay there. We have to come back to our
Make dinner, take the dog to the vet. Mm-hmm. Right. But please talk to us from your spirit and read another poem.
Okay, this is called Some Big Loud Woman. A wonderful poet friend of mine, Diane Gillum, said one day, you know, she's small, I'm small, she's smaller than I am. I'm like 5'1.5". And she said, sometimes I just need to listen to a big, loud woman. And I thought, well, me too. Big, loud woman. I need to listen to some big, loud woman. Orangey red, wild haired, her voice like a waterfall of kettles. Her head back arched to roar that music out. I need the brass and bramble of her low notes, the trembling windows of her bare feet planted on the floorboards, green dress a summer canopy, the wail in one line, a scar on the air. I need to listen to a big, loud woman, heavy fists pounding my table, her anger fire in the hearth. I need the avalanche of her laughter, the flood of her truth. I need to listen to some big, loud woman. I need some big, loud woman to listen to.
Does everybody love you? And let more, please, more, please.
When I think of that beach, when I think of where the planes landed when I was a Barra boy, when I think back generations before the planes, when I ran a little girl with braids flying down the strand from my ma to my da, when I remember being the da, hoisting my boy to my shoulders, walking home in twilight, sky the color of doves, when I remember being the ma, stirring fish head stew in the iron pot over the fire, when I remember changing the straw in our palates, dreaming of a feather tick. I can see blisters on my least one's arm. When she bumped my hand as I ladled up dinner, I see her feet in the straw shoes my ma plaited. And I am young again, wild as a girl, feisty as a boy, a man tall in his strength, a woman full in her giving. And the light of this earth shines through me, and time is the way we join hands.
George Ella, when you say the least one, was that the child in you?
Yes.
What a way to put it. What a way to put it. I've heard it said every way in the world, but never the least one. Only a poet would say that. What do you want as you go forward?
Wow. Ah, what a question.
Well, because you've done so much, you've written 50 books, you sing, you create, you teach, you inspire. And what I like most is you always give credit to those around you, even if they just inspired you with a poem, you always name names. And that is where we get the great community of poetry. We don't step on each other's backs to get anywhere. We stand shoulder to shoulder, which you teach us so well. But is your wish just to go on creating?
I want to just mention one other person who is Ruth Stone.
Ruth Stone is my favorite.
I was blessed to be in her poetry seminar when I was in graduate school at Indiana University. I was there when she was there. And she walked in the first day, said, "I'm Ruth Stone, and here's my poem." Recited her poem advice, and I knew this woman was going to change my life.
And she changed mine too. Ruth Stone, you will never die.
There is nobody like her. And we were friends, you know, from then on. And my life just is immensely blessed. And now we have the essential Ruth Stone collected, and it's just amazing.
Isn't it marvelous? What you're talking about is kind of a magic baton that we hand down, and it is really holy work. I mean, when someone touches your soul and gives you reason to go on, that's pretty big.
It is.
Better than having two eggs in the morning. It's being rich. It's really being rich. Let us have another poem, please. We can't get enough of you. This is George Ella Lyon.
I wrote this poem in 08 after the housing bubble burst and financial situations were dire, and the people with the least suffered the most. The meadow does not know about the stock market. Today she is worth exactly what she was worth yesterday, a year ago, at creation. I don't mean property value, taxable assets. I mean milkweed and copper moths, honeybees, cow vetch, king snakes. Meadow life is not money. What rises and falls here are stems and flowers, leaves and fruit. No zigzag line of profit and panic, but the great wheel turning. Here God gives of her extravagance, and here, like flicker, viceroy, dragonfly, we come into our inheritance.
The voice of George Ella Lyon. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Sinipit Fund, Bravada Foundation, Avidei Shoshani, and Sandy Jackson Cohen. Our engineer is Mike Turpin. I'm Grace Cavalieri.